listeners. Welcome to another episode of Shadow Talk, Digital Shadow's weekly threat intelligence podcast. I'm your very new host, Casey Clark, and with me today, I have Alec.
Hello.
Hey. Then I also have Charles on the line.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey. And then finally, last but not least, we have Rick Holland, Digital Shadow CISO and VP of Strategy. We have some interesting topics today. This week has been an absolute whirlwind. Am I right?
Every week.
You're right. Totally right.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that validation. I need it sometimes. So let's go ahead and get started on our topics. Alec, with the first one, we have North Korea's Beagle Boys robbing banks. Can you kind of give us the rundown? What does this advisory from CISA mean?
Yeah, the Beagle Boys. Yeah, not to get confused with the Beastie Boys, but at the same time,
you gotta fight. But you're right. Cash out ATMs, man.
That's it. Yep. But yeah, so this joint alert is published by the U.S. CISA, the Department of the Treasury, the FBI, and the U.S. Cyber Command. So a lot of work went into this, and the alert provides some technical details and information regarding an ongoing campaign. So this is a follow-on to the original FastCash, and so obviously they named it FastCash 2.0. It's conducted by these threat actors they've named the Beagle Boys, targeting institutions across 36 different countries. The threat actors they attributed to North Korea, and they show pretty significant associations to the Lazarus Group umbrella of threat actors. So definitely some interesting stuff coming out of the CyberCom and U.S. Alerting there.
Yeah, awesome. So generally with this advisory, what are the main developments in their campaign?
Yeah, so like I mentioned, this isn't really a new campaign or a new group. It's as the alert details attacks that have taken place as early as 2014. And then they assess that the group has attempted to steal nearly $2 billion, with the emphasis on the B, since that time. So, very sophisticated, very destructive. In the alert, they mentioned that they've a couple of banks that they've successfully victimized when were inoperable for 2 months. So they weren't able to do anything. And then I think in one instance, they were almost able to get about $1 billion from a bank in New York. So they're very capable, very sophisticated, as I mentioned, as we would expect in this case.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a lot of money. So I was looking at their attack methods, and I know that they leverage Swift systems, but what main attack vectors do they actually use?
Yeah, so just to kind of like start off with initial access, obviously what you would expect here, they've seen some history using job application themed phishing attempts with malicious attachments. So pretty, standard what you typically see across the threat landscape currently is those malicious emails, those malicious attachments to kind of gain initial access. But uniquely also, one thing that I found really interesting in the alert was that they observed they claim that these threat actors have been outsourcing some of the initial access work to some cyber criminals. So rather than kind of doing the dirty work of getting access to these organizations, they'll go and ask these cyber criminals to go ahead and kind of do that initial stuff. And then from what they bring back, what those cyber criminals actually bring back to the Beagle Boys, they make a decision on which organizations they want to target. So it's kind of interesting there. Yeah, so moving on to, after they gain the initial access and as far as the execution of the attack, trying to just kind of keep it high level, there's really good technical information within the alert. So if you're interested in it, definitely recommend going and taking a read. But for time's sake, one of the two things that I pulled out as far as what they're actually doing here. So they're manipulating servers running Switch applications, and then they gain access to the bank's Swift terminals. So Swift attacks, something we've seen, pretty regularly, especially with Lazarus Group previous reporting and everything. So what they're doing is they're using these Swift terminals. Once they have access, it enables them to intercept financial request messages, and then they reply with their own fraudulent but legitimate-looking affirmative response messages to the initial initial request. So this enables them to go ahead and cash out the ATM, where whoever's there will go ahead and obtain that money, and by all means, they have it, and they're gone. And then the second method that I really found was kind of interesting as well, and that they note this is something more new, is that they're actually moving upward within the payment processing supply chain. So they're targeting the interbank payment processing system, so the systems that the banks use to talk with each other. So it's kind of, you know, interesting to do bank-to-bank transfers. So they're, like I mentioned, they're moving upward in that supply chain and doing kind of a double attack vector, so to speak. So not only are they cashing out those ATMs, but targeting those interbank payment systems.
Yeah, wow. So this definitely sounds like a more sophisticated campaign or operation. So it's really interesting to see, you know, what we might be seeing in the future. But I mean, in the meantime, what kind of defenses can financial institutions use to mitigate this?
Yeah, so the advisory gives quite a few really detailed recommended mitigations. And so, you know, definitely go ahead and give those a read. But just to pull out some of the biggest ones, they mentioned validating issuer responses to financial request messages. So that goes back to that ATM cash out, just to make sure that the response messages are actually legitimate. They mentioned, you know, isolating your payment system infrastructure, encrypting data in transit, and then your usual typical mentions of, you know, operating system patches, of making sure your systems are patched and up to date, enforcing a strong password policy, requiring regular password changes, then obviously exercising caution when opening email attachments, even if it's from the expected or the sender appears to be known. So kind of those
absolutely
that we kind of see on a recurring basis.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, those emails, they can be super tricky. I mean, even if they do look legitimate, there's always the possibility of them being bad news. Okay, cool. I mean, on the subject of bank robbing, actually, something just happened in the criminal underworld where a potential but not yet confirmed exit scam took place on Empire Market. And our team over at Photon Research, we actually did just put out a blog talking about that. So if you want to take a look at it, it'll be in the show notes, also available on Digital Shadow's blog and research section.
You know, the Empire's unconfirmed but likely exit scam is just, you know, yet another example of no honor among thieves, which if you don't track the cyber criminal underground, you won't be surprised by that. But you know, a lot of these marketplaces, they will have escrow systems set up. You know, you saw this with Alphabay, although Alphabay wasn't an exit scam, that was a law enforcement action. But any of that money that's sitting there in escrow waiting for the good or service to be confirmed to be delivered is sitting there waiting for the admins to take. And so I don't know, my recommendation to criminals is A, probably don't be a criminal, but B, minimize the amount of funds that you have in escrow, because they could be taken from those that run the marketplace at any time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, with the Empire Market, it's such a notable, or it was such a notable and prominent market. So all of these criminals, they have those trust in this market. So whenever they go away and they lose all that money, it's kind of curious to see what will happen with other markets as well.
It's also, if you think from an intelligence perspective, you know, it's good that these things go down. However, it's a loss of collection capability. For law enforcement and security researchers, right? We're tracking actors on Empire that are now going to set up shop elsewhere with some money that they've lost. So while it's nice to see these things go down, you know, you have to rebuild your collection on those threat actors and find out the new markets that they go to. But as I always joke around in presentation, cybercrime finds a way. I do these Jurassic Park themed talks, and cybercrime finds a way. There will be another English language marketplace coming soon.
Yeah, absolutely. I won't be surprised to see, you know, one of the other English language forums come out from the wings and improve and kind of set themselves apart from Empire, or if we just see, you know, a completely new one pop up as well.
And the blog talks about that. So take a look at the blog of what we think could be coming.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, cool. So on to topic number two. There's actually a new ransomware operation named DarkSide, and it was discovered attacking organizations since early August 2020. And they have ransom demands that are ranging anywhere from $200,000 to $2 million. So definitely heavy hitting, but not anything we're not used to hearing about. So they actually created a press release, which sounds oddly similar to other groups where they claim to be former affiliates who've made millions of dollars in previous ransomware operations. So since they apparently couldn't find a product that met their needs, they decided to launch their own and coined it DarkSide. So this crew, they seem pretty similar to other ransomware operators that we've covered, be it Maze, Sononokibi, Doppelpaymer, because they steal victim data before they encrypt systems. That's kind of become the gold standard these days in the ransomware area. And then after that, they'll post the link, the data link to their site to further pressure organizations into paying the ransom. So not only do they have the whole pay or get breached method going with it, they also have their own website where they host their victims' data. Their attacks have been customized based on their actual intended target organization. So it's not just kind of a, hey, we have this ransomware module, we're going to toss it at every single organization. No, it's actually very customized. And then when they encrypt the systems, their message includes the amount of data that was stolen, the type of data that was stolen, and then a link to the data on their specific website. An interesting kind of part to this group is that they claim that they don't want to quote unquote kill your business. And that's kind of something that we really haven't seen, at least as a specific reason voiced from these ransomware operators. And then they also claim that
they gotta differentiate yourself. You gotta differentiate yourself. It's a crowded market.
Yeah, one way or another, you gotta, I guess, show a little bit of faith. I mean, criminals have a heart. I don't really believe that, but
it just reminds me of those the Taiwanese ransomware stuff we covered a few months ago, where they had like just impeccable customer service. When the guy was like, the guy was just like, "Look, like I think you guys targeted me by mistake. I'm a small business and can't afford this." And they're like, "Oh yeah, our bad man. Here's the key." Like, you know, kind of.
I remember that. Yeah. It's like, oops, sorry, I didn't mean to. You know. My bad.
Customer service is key, I think, on a lot of stuff.
So. Yeah, so there's like a sliver of hope. I mean, beyond that, beyond them not wanting to completely kill your business, they also claim that they don't want to attack specific organizations. So that's companies that are within like medicine and education and nonprofit and even government sectors. But we'll see if that actually sticks.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's not the first time that we heard that. And I think pretty early, you know, back in March of this year when COVID was kind of just getting its reins and there's big emphasis on the medical field, we saw a lot of operators coming in and saying, hey, we're not going to target any medical entities. And then, like, sure enough, like a couple weeks later, they were doing what they said they weren't going to be doing. So be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah, ha, gotcha. Just kidding. Yeah, for sure. Actually, based on research, it is possible that the group does maintain ties to R-Evil, which I wouldn't be surprised based off of these similarities. One of the most obvious similarities would be their ransom note. It looks incredibly similar to the R-Evil group's note. And then also this DarkSide operation, they use PowerShell that executes a command that's used to delete shadow volume copies on the machine, which is the same as R-Evil.
Yeah. So. I mean, that's interesting too, just because I think we're just going to continue to see more and more spin-offs of the, you know, kind of the main ransomware operators. So, you know, Maze, R-Evil, like you mentioned, you're just going to continue to see these operations being stood up and trying to like make a name for themselves. So it'd be, makes sense. It wouldn't surprise me if they do have some sort of ties to R-Evil.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's not confirmed, but it's definitely something to keep an eye on. And on to the next topic. Charles, can you kind of give us an idea of what's going on with this Death Stalker thing?
Yeah, actually. So this is a pretty interesting group. It's kind of a bit of a change of pace. They're a threat actor that's been targeting a lot of like wealth management, like law firms, financial institutions, things like that, like financial technology, groups of that area and in those verticals. And what's interesting is that they don't deploy ransomware. They don't steal like people's payment information or anything. It almost always just seems like they just are an information gathering entity, and they either are trying to sell that information as some kind of broker, or they are just some kind of like mercenary hacker for hire kind of organization for information gathering purposes. They don't appear to be affiliated with any governments or anything like that. And that's kind of what's interesting is because you don't always, like typically people think of groups with this level of sophistication as some kind of like, you know, state-backed organization or operating for some kind of other financial incentive like ransomware. And these guys are typically are just looking for information, appears to be the most part. And they typically start by like with targeted spear phishing, and they'll deliver like a malicious document that's not actually a document. It's just a like a LNK file that provides a shortcut on Windows systems through to the command prompt and downloads their PowerSync module, which at a very high level installs itself to communicate with the C2 server somewhere and uses a variety of resolvers to gather, you know, URLs for where those C2 servers are at, things like that. So you see stuff like on Reddit or Google Plus, things all over the website, places like that, or all over the internet, you would find things like that. They use a wide variety of sources, and they're a pretty aggressive group. To me, it's very interesting that they're not, you know, state backed or anything like that. It's one of the few instances you see of more of this, like, again, I use that term hackers for hire kind of loosely, but it's not often, I think, that you see that in the cyber criminal underground. So.
Okay. Yeah, that's really interesting. Actually, I was kind of reading up on this. I mean, you kind of want to dig into what other kind of links this group might have to other groups.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting when you look at like what their techniques and like tactics are. A lot of the stuff seems like it's pretty similar to like I'm probably going to mispronounce this, but like Janicab. That same PowerSync module, it's been noted to be used all the way back in like 2012 and like in prominence in 2015. Similar techniques were also used, I mean, by EvilNum. So that's a malware family that seems to use very similar processes for getting, you know, implants installed on systems by using those malicious link files and stuff like that to establish like PowerShell commands that execute to install implants on systems.
Okay, awesome. So based off of kind of what their previous attacks have been, can you kind of make any correlation or lines to what general geographies or sectors they target?
So, I mean, they've been all over the place. It's crazy. And that kind of leads credence to that whole, again, like almost mercenary style hacking for hire stuff. Cause they'll target those entities that are like law offices, wealth consultancy firms, things like that. But there's been activity noted with their PowerSync implant that they've developed, in like Argentina, Cyprus, China, Switzerland, Taiwan, the UK. They're literally all over the place, and that's kind of what's interesting is they just seem to be one of those kind of groups that is not necessarily state-backed or anything, and not trying to just make a quick buck. Like it seems like they kind of have like a with the date going back to their first noted activity and stuff, like kind of like a long-term goal. It's just a kind of different group than you see normally a lot of the time. So
yeah for sure, they definitely kind of stand out here. I mean, cybercrime knows no borders, so and then I'm going to shamelessly plug one more blog that we just released this week. It's actually a pretty interesting one that covers the Clear Web Forum statistics based on Alexa rankings. If you're interested in that, once again, check out the show notes and it'll be there for you. And on to our very last topic. Alec, you have a interesting spy story for us. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So just the other day, the U.S. Department of Justice announced charges against a Russian citizen who traveled to the United States to attempt and recruit, convince an employee for an unnamed Nevada company to install malware on the employee's network. So he, you know, obviously was going to take some cash to convince this employee here. So he brought him $1 million, said, "I'll give you $1 million to go ahead and install malware on your company's network." Unfortunately for the Russian national, the employee of the Nevada company decided that he was going to go ahead and report that to the FBI. In which the FBI decided to go ahead and pursue this and actually was able to arrest the individual, the Russian national, So, you know, definitely an interesting one, definitely something we, you know, might not see too often, but it's definitely something that goes on in the background.
Yeah, that's completely wild. I mean, that gives me heebie-jeebies. That makes me nervous, but yeah, that's a...
Yeah, I mean, if any of your coworkers just seem to come to some cache quickly, and, you know, there might be a malware infection on your company's network, it might, you know, might raise some...
This is illustrative of, you know, insider threat and the need to have insider threat programs. Don't think that something like this couldn't happen to your organization. It's probably lower on the likelihood of your threat model, but you should prepare staff, and you could use this example, actually be a pretty entertaining example to use in security awareness training. And then having your staff members know how to report something in, you know, through the security team, through an email, whatever the case may be, on it. Like I say, likelihood's probably low, but it's something that's possible, and you should level up your team to know how to respond in the event someone is trying to solicit them to do something malicious to your organization.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. I mean, we usually talk about the accidental insiders because there are very few actual insider threat incidents or that actually hit the news or any type of interesting articles. So whenever you see this stuff, it's like, okay, yeah, it's real. It can totally happen. So definitely something to consider.
Yeah, and it looks like in the indictment, the Russian native actually mentions that he successfully recruited two other employees, with one of the previous victim companies paying a $4 million ransom following a successful hack. So it was, yeah, at one point successful. And it just happened that this employee that he happened to contact was someone who had a good heart and decided to go ahead and forego the $1 million and turn him over to the FBI. So,
was it a good heart or were they just afraid of getting caught?
Who knows?
I mean,
I mean, from the criminal side of things, man, for $1 million investment to get a $4 million payout, it's not a bad turnaround either. So
that's fair. Good old cost benefit analysis of crime. All right, cool. So that should wrap us up for this episode. Thanks, Alec, Charles, and Rick for joining me.
Thanks, yes. Casey.
Thanks. Thank you. Good to be here.
All right, listeners, y'all have a good one. Happy Friday. Keep it real.